This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are. This is Tracy Murda on behalf of Richard Jacobs of Secrets of Attorney Marketing. Today, I want to welcome a very special guest, celebrity divorce attorney Stacy D. Phillips. Stacy, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Stacy, you are well known in your industry and in your practice areas, of course, as a very highly recognized family law specialist, as well as a partner at Blank Rome in Los Angeles. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You also, I'm
obnoxious,
told,
sorry.
No, hey, you've got the accolades. You stand up and say it.
Thank you.
So you've also authored a book called Divorce. It's all about control, how to win the emotional, psychological, and legal wars. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Today I wanted to talk to you about the topic of protecting your resources before, during, and after a relationship. We all know we get a little bit tied up emotionally in relationships and kind of forget about some of the more practical matters. So tell me a little bit about your experiences and also maybe, you know, what prompted you to write the book on divorce and control and things of that nature and how that ties into protecting one's resources.
Well, my experience is that divorce in whatever shape or form, even at its best, is pretty horrific. And I believe that knowledge is power. So whatever relationship you're in, love is very important, but you also can't be blind to the realities of life, nor can you let the realities of life control love completely. So it's best to be knowledgeable about what you have, make choices. You can make a choice to share everything or not share everything, but you need to think about things and plan and communicate. Communicate is probably the most important part of a relationship. And I wrote my book because I found myself saying the same thing over and over and over again. I can visualize it sitting in my chair behind my desk with a person, a client or potential client sitting opposite me, just repeating the same things. And I finally said, well, I can only touch a few people, so maybe I can touch more. And folks coming into a divorce, most people want to read something. They want to feel like they have some control in an uncontrollable situation. Mm-hmm. So they want to read something, so let me say it in my speak. Not legal speak, but my speak. And that's what prompted me to do it. Ironically, I was focused on men to some degree more than women, but I've had both women and men from across the country write me thank you notes. You don't know who you touch, but you touch people.
Oh, absolutely. Why do you think it is, or do you find, I guess, that when people are entering into a relationship, especially if they're, you know, preparing to maybe move in together, cohabitate, why do they forget about such practical things as, you know, finances? Is it just such an unsexy topic? We don't want to go there?
They don't forget. They just don't want to go there. It sort of spoils the moment. It's like interrupting the joy and, you know, people crave love, crave that feeling that you can't describe. And then if you make it real and figure out who pays the bills and who brings in the money and who takes out the garbage, that's really a downer.
This is true. So how can someone prepare financially before they head into any sort of, I guess, cohabitation relationship?
Well, I'm a believer that folks should know their financial situation regardless if they're in a relationship or not. There are all too many people who just sort of pay bills, don't have a sense of what they have and what their budget is, et cetera. But if you're in a relationship, you should communicate about money because that's one of the biggest areas of disagreement. You should know what you have, what you can contribute, what you should expect, because dashed expectations are horrible. That can ruin a relationship. Talk about it, and depending on how old you are, what your background is, for example, if you have two people coming out of school, both with no money, I don't believe in a prenuptial agreement. But if you have a second or third marriage, or somebody has kids, or somebody has inherited wealth, or expected inherited wealth, it is wise to talk about it and protect it in a written contract. And if you can't get through the issues of the terms of that written contract when the bloom is still on, when you're still quote-unquote in love, you'll never make it through marriage.
So the words prenup and postnup and things of that nature,
or
they
cohab
always,
agreement.
Or cohab agreement. See, now, I haven't even heard that term. I wouldn't have even thought to take it that far. Now, are you talking about an actual legal document of two people living together in a romantic relationship and sharing bills and finances and things of that nature? Does it actually have to be a legal document?
Well, if you are both not coming from the same place, one is far wealthier or has different responsibilities, one has children, even if you're not getting married, it is wise to talk about the finances and write down what you both agreed to, because people's perceptions and memory of what they agreed to doesn't necessarily match the reality. And that doesn't mean somebody is right or somebody's wrong. Just people interpret things differently. So a written document can be very helpful. Do I believe that this should be the case in every relationship? Absolutely not. But in certain circumstances, absolutely yes.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the other possible agreements out there that can perhaps, you know, smooth things out should the relationship go south. Now, you've also mentioned a real estate agreement. What would something like that actually be and look like?
Look like a literally a contract or a deed. For example, if one person is buying the property but they are planning to share it equally, then a document needs to say that. For example, in California, if two people are married and one person puts a piece of real estate in their own name, that doesn't necessarily mean it's that person's alone. Similarly, if it's in both names and somebody uses their traceable separate property, it doesn't mean necessarily that it is shared. And I'll give you an example. If two people are buying a house and one puts it first in his or her name and then agrees to put the other person on the title, that other person thinks that he or she is getting half of the value of the property. In California, that is not true. You're only getting half of the appreciation from the time you put the other name on the title. So if the relationship splits up, marriage splits up, then one person thinks they have half the value of the house and the other says, au contraire. So it is better to talk about it and understand what the legal ramifications are, because people's knowledge and the law don't necessarily match.
Aha, well said. So you also talk a little bit about things like addiction, and that could, I guess, range from anything from shopping addiction to drug and alcohol addiction. How have you seen that sort of wreak havoc on people's finances when they're in a relationship or cohabitation situation?
Well, I have seen it very starkly in wealthy families, let alone not so wealthy families, where the addicted person steals things, pawns things, draws against lines of credit, sells things in order to feed his or her habit. Similarly, the cost of a rehab or rehabs is very expensive. And if somebody loses his or her job or is not able to even get a job, it wreaks havoc. I mean, I have watched families where, for example, the husband was a substantial partner in a large law firm, be a cocaine addict, lose his partnership, lose his family, lose his home, and have to start all over if he's lucky.
And I suppose, I mean, things like that you don't necessarily know about until you're well into a relationship in some instances.
That's true.
Okay.
I have had several couples come to me, well, one side comes to me when there is some form of gambling addiction or spending addiction or risk-taking, and the other party, other spouse doesn't want to be part of that, so they do a postnuptial agreement in order to let one person take whatever risks he or she wants, and it doesn't affect the other. In my personal experience, all of those postnups turned into divorces. Made the divorce easier, but the intent and the idea was, I think, wise.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about those prenups and postnup agreements. How do they, what's the bug I'm looking for? How do they blend into an otherwise happy relationship? They just always sound so, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to bring it up, but they are so practical in today's world. So how do you suggest people kind of introduce those into their new or budding relationship or marriage?
Well, early, kindly, and sometimes once they're signed, they actually poison a relationship. It depends how they're handled. I have done several prenuptial agreements where my client or the other client has had the benefit of the prenup. They got far more as a result of the prenup than they would have otherwise. So sometimes a prenup is the best thing that could happen to somebody. Example, two people are getting married and one is very wealthy. The other one is not so wealthy. At least in California, depending on the circumstances, a divorce after 5 years, 10 years, when somebody starts with a huge asset pool, the other person would get very little. But in the prenups I've done, they have walked away with millions and millions and millions of dollars, because when the romance is on and the other spouse wants to know that he or she is doing something positive for his or her mate, the contract is very beneficial.
And I assume prenups and postnups and things, they aren't easily, if at all, broken, or, I mean, they hold up fairly well in court regardless of the situation. Is that correct, or is it kind of based on how they're set up, I guess?
It depends on the state. It depends on the law of the state. For example, they are upheld, in my experience, far more often in New York than in California. California is better than I think in some other locations. California, for example, does not have common law marriage. Everybody asks me that. If you live together a certain amount of time, aren't you, you know, the equivalent of being married? That's true in some states, not true in California. But when I have somebody getting divorced, I ask where they've lived, because maybe they became a common law spouse in another state. So in some states, even without a piece of paper, without a minister, rabbi, or a clergy person, or a mayor saying, you know, I do for you, you can be the equivalent of married. Not true in California.
Okay, I guess I never even would have thought of that.
Be careful, depending
yeah.
where you live.
Interesting. I'm in Texas, so that's all common law.
Well, in Texas, you're one of the few states that has a jury for a divorce. And
I
there's no spousal support, if I recall.
I did not realize that. Well, hopefully, I haven't gotten there yet. So. Oh, dear. So, Stacey, what is your sort of final thoughts or advice for folks, you know, whatever age it is, whether it's your first, second, third, fifth marriage, when you're joining a new relationship or starting out? What does that conversation look like? What should that look like with your partner of, this is how I want to move forward, this is responsibly how we do it, et cetera?
Have a transparent, open conversation. I lay this out a bit in my book, so mm-hmm. buy my book. You can go online and do that. And talk about the things that are the weighty subjects before you're in the weighty part of, you know, a marriage. I'm not Catholic, but the Catholic Church requires, as I understand it, counseling mm-hmm. before people get married. I'm a believer in that, because they have you take a look at what is important to you. Do you want children? When do you want children? How do you want to raise your children? Where does religion fit in? Where does finance fit in? Are you going to divide responsibilities? Are you going to share responsibilities? Whatever folks agree to that is mutual, God bless. But when one person is free with money and the other is more miserly, and they're sharing finances, or the more expansive one is, you know, taking care of finances, you're going to have problems. So you may as well know your strengths and your weaknesses and how you deal with those before you say, I do.
Excellent. And for anyone who would like more information and would like to buy your book, where is your book available?
www.controlyourdivorce.com, or just look up my name, Stacey D. Phillips, and you'll find my book. Or just look up Divorce, It's All About Control, How to Win the Emotional, Psychological, and Legal Wars. You can get it lots of different ways, but get it.
And just sort of in a final thought, too, I was thinking, you know, with all of these points that you bring up and you touch on today, this doesn't mean that divorce has to be nasty. This doesn't mean that going into a relationship, everything has to be cold and businesslike. It's, from what I'm getting, it's a matter of protecting yourself and your partner protecting him or herself.
Is that a safe assumption? It's a wise statement, but unfortunately, all too often, it can be very nasty, and it is generally very nasty when people have different expectations and the reality does not match the expectation. Also, if folks are splitting up and they, you know, have a nice lifestyle together, but when you divide it into two households, neither can maintain the lifestyle that they were enjoying, it's really hard. It's really hard to go from a big house to, you know, a studio apartment or a one-bedroom apartment with three kids. So the more you communicate, the more you have equal and reasonable expectations, which is really hard to do. I'm not saying this is easy, but the more you communicate and are transparent, I believe the better.
Absolutely. Well, I want to give a special thanks to you, Stacey. I really appreciate your time and sharing this wise and wonderful information with us.
Thank you.
Get Stacey's book, Divorce, It's All About Control by Stacey D. Phillips. ControlYourDivorce.com is where you can reach her and where you can find her book. Thank you, Stacey, again, and we look forward to definitely reading your book here. I think I'm going to pick it up right over Christmas break here.
Well, enjoy, and happy holidays, and healthy holidays to everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a good one, Stacey.
You too.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.